Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 36 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Direct Seed, the Next Generation. About my conversation with Kay Meyer, Executive Director of the Pacific Northwest Direct Seed Association, at her home outside of Colton, Washington. Listen carefully and you can hear the rooster crowing in the background. Meyer isn't like me. She grew up on a farm in the area, and she watched as her father converted to direct seed in the 1990s. Not to mention, she is married to Ty Meyer, Production Ag Manager at the Spokane County Conservation District, and a strong proponent of direct seeding. This is another one of those podcasts where my self-imposed 20-minute time limit gets in the way because Meyer and I spoke for nearly an hour. As a result, you're not going to hear about the importance of government programs to making the direct seed conversion, nor the parts of our conversation that address chemical fallow, residue removal, the cost of equipment, and corporate sponsorship of the organization. Not to mention, I bring my own history to the subject, given that I was a reporter for the Pacific Northwest Agricultural Weekly, Capital Press, when the Direct Seed organization was founded in 2000, and I wrote about the early adopters and even went on the pilgrimage to the Dakota Lakes Research Farm in Pierre, South Dakota, where Dwayne Beck is the research manager, a figure who has wielded a godfather-like authority when it comes to direct seed do's and don'ts. It was fun to write about direct seeders back in the day because they were so enthusiastic about what they were doing. That enthusiasm, however, got in the organization's way in the early years because many of those making the conversion had an almost religious devotion to the philosophy. As in, if you're not one of us, you're doing it wrong. An approach Meyer has certainly taken the edge off. The PNDSA has had its membership's ups and downs over the years. There is a core group of about 260 that hasn't varied much over the years. But that doesn't mean direct seed acreage isn't growing. As Meyer said,
we still feel like we're growing in acres because of the consolidation of farms that's occurring in the last few years particularly. And so even though our numbers are fairly plateaued out, the acres are still growing as far as numbers of direct seed acres.
And yet, we probably have 1,500 farmers in eastern Washington.
There's a lot more direct seed farmers out there than our members. So we see that. We see 400 or 500 people coming to the conference. When we put out our emails, we have 800 people that we send our emails out to, but only 250 have actually converted as members. So there is definitely a lot more happening out there in the direct seed world than our membership.
Yeah. Is there a particular age bracket when farmers make the decision to go to direct seed?
You know, I think direct seeding, because of all of the different components, is more appealing or exciting to the younger generation. Maybe not as scary because they're already familiar with GPS and computer systems, where they're doing the prescription mapping and the GIS mapping, layering, drones. I mean, there's some really exciting things in agriculture now that can be a little bit of a barrier for people, older people that aren't necessarily that comfortable with technology. And they also, I think younger people also are seeing the quality of life balance. You know, they don't need, you know, you can have a little bit more of a life balance without having to have spring work take 6 or 8 weeks. And then that rolls right into harvest and that rolls right into fall work versus direct seeding with a 1 or 2 pass system. They can see that that makes a little more sense from a time and family perspective. And they have more of a long-term vision. I mean, they're just starting their career. So they're looking at, if they're making an investment on equipment, they can say, well, yeah, that makes sense because I'm in this for the next 40 years versus someone that's older that may only have 5 or 10 years left farming, and then they're going to be selling it or transitioning it to kids or whoever may not have that same kind of interest to be making those investments at that point in their time. So I'd say younger folks.
What exactly is direct seeding? And by that I mean, is the term limited to those individuals who simply have a one-pass system, or does it include other variations?
Right. So it does include multiple variations. We talk about no-till, which is a specific one-pass system where everything is done directly into the residue of last year's crop. There's no additional preparation to the field, and it's done with fertilizing and seeding in one pass. Direct seeding is a little bit more encompassing with up to a two-pass system. Typically, some people are doing split fertilizer application in the fall and in the spring. But they're still doing a low disturbance type of, using a low disturbance type of drill and not doing a lot of disturbance to the soil. They may be doing some shredding or some residue management types of things, but it's a one or two pass system that's actually a full disturbance pass on the soil.
That's interesting that you make the distinction about no-till and direct seed. I always thought that the reason we call it direct seed out here is because no-till got such a bad reputation in the 70s when farmers were trying to make the transition, and because the equipment technology wasn't there, many of them failed.
Yeah, so that's definitely one, as we thought about naming the Pacific Northwest Direct Seed Association, that was one factor that was in play at that time in 2000 when we were formed, making sure that we had a positive connotation because of the failures that happened back then. But it's still, when I go and speak nationally, no-till is the standard across the nation, and direct seed, people's like, oh, direct seed. So a lot of people interchange direct seed and no-till. I have a little bit of a different separation, with the no-till being the one pass and the direct seeding be one or two pass.
Can we agree that it's easier to make the transition to direct seeding in a higher moisture environment?
I don't think so. It's each rainfall zone has its different considerations. And so in a drier environment, there's different drills, there's different technologies. Different drills work better. Maybe you go with a hoe drill or something like that. That's an easier transition because it's similar to the type of drill that you're using in a high disturbance system. And so those hoe drills might be really good in the dry regions. And there's also disc drills. So it's all dependent. It's successful everywhere. And that's the great thing. Now that we have a 17-year track record, we have success in every county and every rainfall micro region that we have in the Pacific Northwest. And so now it's just a matter of learning from that, learning what's working, what equipment's working, what rotations are you able to do to move into because of your direct seeding. And I'd say in the lower rainfall regions, people are seeing more success because the yields, you actually do see a yield bump, 5, 10, 20% a bump of yields because of that moisture. And here in the wetter regions, you don't necessarily see those yield bumps because you already have unlimited moisture. You just don't have to, moisture is not your limiting factor. But out in the dry regions, moisture has been the limiting factor for 100 years. And so now they're able to start to see some increases. And so it's anywhere, everywhere has their challenges. Wetlands have challenges with rat tail fescue, dries weed resistance. So each one of them has individual challenges. And that's the goal of our association, is to help get farmers connected with farmers in the regions that have been successful to help others succeed.
Back in my reporting days, there was a real dichotomy between direct seeders and conventional farmers. Direct seeders were convinced and outspoken about it, that direct seeding was the best approach. Is that still the modus operandi?
Well, the Direct Seed Association, our mission is to help farmers transition from a high disturbance situation to a low disturbance situation. And there are proven economical and environmental benefits of it. So, it's a complex question. Transitioning to direct seed takes a major mind shift, and there's just changes in your operation. So it's proven successful. It's proven more efficient, more economical. So in those regards, yes, it is a better way to farm because, we have the technology now that can go through all different types of residue, that works in different rain zones, that's working in these different crop varieties that people are using. So it is, and there are a lot of passionate people about it. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is being economically viable. So yes, people, direct seed direct seed farmers, what I love about them is that they're willing to share not only their successes, but their failures. Very open to operational questions and rates and yields and costs, more so than in general, farmers are pretty independent. They're pretty not necessarily collaborative in saying, hey, I'm doing this and I made this or that cost me this. So direct seeders, yeah, they're vocal, but there's a lot of farmers in general usually are generally stubborn. And so there's a lot of vocal people on the conventional high tillage side too, that we have some good debates with.
When people ask you, why aren't there more people direct seeding? Because it's such a no brainer, according to you. Explain.
It's looking from the outside, looking in and not dealing with having history of production and all the other things that you have to transition. It does look like a no-brainer. And, I do presentations to teachers and kids, and they hear that it's economical and the yields are as strong or maybe even stronger. You're building soil health, so you don't have the reliance on chemicals. You say, yeah, more people should be doing this. But there is a challenge. There's a big learning curve that has to be overcome, and inclination or a wish to make that change. And because there's a lot of hard work in transitioning, it does pencil out. It does seem like a no-brainer, but I know it's more complex than that. And so that's one of our goals with the Direct Seed Association, is try and help people along their journey, because it is a journey, and encourage people to take more of a baby step approach. Some of the old timers, they said, well, we had a farm sale and we sold every piece of iron on the farm, and cold turkey, we were direct seed. I'm like, well, that's a risky proposition. I guess you're in it to win it when you do that. But we encourage much more gradual progression now.
Do you have to have a rotation to be direct seeder?
It is a key component to be successful, because you're not using tillage on weed and disease management. You're using your crop rotation to help with that. And so you have to break up, you have to have different diversity so you can use different chemistries then to break those weed and disease cycles in between your wheat, predominantly here in the Pacific Northwest, we're about growing really great wheat. And so direct seeding, you're now diversifying, which is a good thing at the end of the day, especially with markets, how they've been the last couple of years with wheat. They've been able to diversify and have some other opportunities with oil seeds and garbanzos that have really had strong markets. But the soil health benefit is a great, amazing thing that's happening with this diversity, but weed and disease management, that's really one critical way that people are getting out of that weed and disease management, or getting out of those cycles of weed and disease management that tillage was the answer for in a high tillage cropping system.
As I talk to weed scientists and others, they're very concerned with herbicide resistance, and they indicate that by taking tillage off the table, direct seeders are fighting weeds with one arm tied behind their back. How are direct seeders approaching herbicide resistance?
Out here, we're definitely, it's a concern for direct seeders, because we don't have the tillage that we do. And so we've been reliant on chemicals. And so people are seeing now, especially in that wheat fallow type of rotation, where weeds are starting to become resistant. So in working, we have a few board members that have been really working actively. So Aaron Esser out in the Davenport Lind region and his Wilkie Research Farm. But we also have some low rainfall directors down in the Ione, Oregon, that I think Oregon has seen a little bit higher weed resistance pressure than Washington folks. But strategies definitely are that diverse crop rotation is one strategy. But using different chemistries of just in the last 6 months, farmers in the Ione, Oregon area have seen successful way to manage these resistant weeds that they've seen issues with over the last couple of years. And what they're doing is mixing 2 to 3 chemistries in one application, glyphosate still being in there, but they've got a couple other chemistries that they're putting in there and seeing really good success with getting the weeds down. Also, another technology that has been a big success is the equipment. So the infrared technology, such as a Weed Seeker or a Weed It, And what that does is a 90-foot boom can go through a chem fallow field and detect just the green weeds and spot spray them. And what that allows the farmer to do is reduce their overall chemical amount that they're using by 80 to 90%. But they can increase the rate of the chemicals that are being applied to the weed. So that spot spray can have a higher dosage, still well within the labeled amounts, but a higher dosage that can zap the weed down. And so that is that weed technology, or the weed seeker technology, that infrared technology is an important tool.
I've talked to direct seeders who say there's no such thing as direct seeding with tillage. And by that, I mean a tillage operation at 4, 5, 6 year intervals. Now, is that the general mindset of your membership, or given the new realities in terms of weed resistance, is that mindset changing?
I don't think direct seed farmers will just say, I'm going to till up every 5, 6 years just because. They're going to till up because there's a specific reason that they cannot, and that's the tool that they need to use in the toolbox to fix that specific reason. But I don't feel any of our members, any of the direct seeders, are just going to go out and say, hey, every 4 years I'm going to till up just because I think it might be good for the soil. They've worked too long to build up soil structure and leave that soil, the soil health, the biosystem that they've built up, the earthworm environment that they've built up. And you go once through it and you plow it all over, you're starting from scratch to build all that back up. So they really think hard about doing that and use it if they need to. But I don't think it's something that they're like, oh, I'm just going to do it every 4 or 5 years because I think it might be good for weeds or might be good for this. I mean, they really are using it only as a specific strategy.
When I was reporting on direct seed years ago, it was very prescriptive. And this is what you had to do. 1, 2, 3, 4. You're a little bit more loosey-goosey here.
Yeah, well, back in the day when direct seeding wasn't going so well, they're going back to Dwayne Beck's research farm, and they said, Dwayne Beck told me to do 1, 2, 3, 4, and I came back here and did 1, 2, 3, 4, and now I'm bankrupt, or I failed miserably. And they're just within the micro regions. It's really fun to listen to the farmers at our conference and hearing about the different strategies that they're doing, because what people are doing in Ritzville for direct seed, their direct seed farm, is completely different what's happening here on the Palouse. So the rainfall regions have quite a variation with equipment, with rotations, with seed depths, with different issues. We have rat tail fescue issues here. They don't, but they have, the weed resistance things that they're watching. So huge variations just within our little micro regions within Washington State and Idaho and Oregon. So it is very loosey goosey. And even farmers that farm next to each other have very different opinions on what drills better, what works for them. So there's a lot of operational decisions that have to be made. What is standard? I mean, we know the bases, the basics, the foundation that have to be there, spraying out for green bridge, diverse crop rotations, trying to build soil health. And so to do different management things that tillage has been doing in the past. So you kind of have the foundational things that are the same across the board, but a lot of variation.
We've talked here a lot about the different kinds of technologies that we have available now to us. What about the transition in terms of the mental attitude that the farmer has who goes to direct seed?
Yes, and that's really a big part of this. They have to want to make the change and be willing to make adjustments and see some failures, make some adjustments, and persevere on, because it's so different. It's hard to explain. Even the young guys that are on our board that are just 2 to 3 years in the transition, they said it's tough. There's a lot of difference to learn. They can't rely back on their father or their uncle because they're, in a conventional mindset and a naysayer maybe. And so they're really kind of forging this, experience and trying to figure it out on their own. So there is a lot of changes, but there's huge benefits. And in talking to one of our board members yesterday, he said when he was penciling it out, he said it penciled out economically just fine. And he said even now that he's 3 years in, he was conservative in the economic benefits that was budgeting for and then what actually occurred. So he's been really surprised there. But he also talked about the mental change is really the biggest thing that he's had to change. He's a finance guy. He knows equipment, but it's the mental change of not going out and plowing your field, things that are just like reflex to farmers, changing that mindset. And then understanding there's a lot of proactive management that has to occur in a direct seed operation. You're doing a lot more soil testing. You're working a lot of, growing crops you've never grown before. So there's a lot of learning in that, the precision ag, the technology side we've talked about, the new equipment. So there's just a lot of things, and you have to be willing to make that effort to go to classes and seminars and invest the time to get comfortable with it all.
Three Washington grain commissioners practice their version of direct seeding and are members of the Pacific Northwest Direct Seed Association. Meyer is actually scheduled to appear before the group at its September meeting. When it comes to the future of the organization, Meyer would like to see PNDSA membership grow along with acreage, although she believes every climatic regime can successfully convert to the practice. She doesn't believe its adoption will happen quickly everywhere. Over time, however, she's optimistic direct seeding will reveal its superiority. That's it for episode 36, or what I'm calling Direct Seed, the Next Generation, about my conversation with Kay Meyer, Executive Director of the Pacific Northwest Direct Seed Association. Hope you enjoyed the show, and will join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It!
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chilling. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget to have the shit. We feed you.